WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Actor Bob Balaban made his directorial debut in the new comic horror film Parents. It stars Randy Quaid and Mary Beth Hurt as a suburban couple in the 1950s who are parents of a 10-year-old boy. They look like the perfect family, but the parents have a ghoulish secret. Yesterday, Balaban talked with us about directing. Today, he talks about being an actor. He co-starred in such films as Absence of Malice, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Altered States, and Dead Bang. To learn about directing, Balaban apprenticed himself to Sidney Lumet, who directed Balaban in Prince of the City. In that film, Balaban played a ruthless federal prosecutor who in this scene is trying to convince a corrupt cop to cooperate.
Gino, you have a very enviable reputation in the department and in the city. You're a hero. How's it going to look if your force is to take you downtown and book you? Gino Moscone's the top cop. Everyone looks up to Moscone. But Gino, you and I know you're a whore. Just a poor old whore who bellies up for any crook with $2. A whore and a thief. As far as I'm concerned, you have only two options. You cooperate with us, you make the calls, or you go to jail with the other thieves. I don't even want to think about the third option.
In your acting parts in movies, you always seem to play the white-collar professional.
Mm-hmm.
You were a scientist or a scientist-like person in Altered States, 2010, Close Encounters, where you were also a cartographer.
Although in the beginning I was a translator, but they changed
that. That's right. And then a government investigator in Absence of Malice, a parole officer in Dead Bang. Why do you think you get all these white-collar professional roles?
Because I look like a white-collar professional, basically, I guess. I think that what happened was I used to get cast a lot in things because I didn't seem like an actor, because I looked like the person that was actually doing the thing they were supposed to be doing. And I guess my career has primarily been doing things where you looked like a real person, you mm-hmm. know, where you seemed like pretty much what you walked in like. And I guess I tend to be a little cerebral sometimes, although I'm trying to be less. And I guess I've gotten typecast somewhat in what you've just mentioned, but as far as I'm concerned, it's not a bad type to be, because there's a lot of range within there, and at least I've been working.
Mm-hmm. You were in two movies with Richard Dreyfuss, Close Encounters, and Whose Life Is It Anyway?
Yes, and he appeared in 1 second in my short film as well.
Were you ever confused for each other?
Yes, all the time, which is quite amazing, because we look nothing alike, and yet we do have the same little chickenpox scar right in the middle of our forehead, but I don't think that's why people think that. When I did Close Encounters, we were always mistaken for each other, because Richard had just done Jaws, or recently done Jaws, and in Close Encounters, I had glasses and a beard very similar to what Richard had had in Jaws, and Richard had shaved everything and had gained 25 pounds and didn't really look like the public persona that people knew him to be from Jaws. So it was kind of natural, I think, that people thought that I was Richard.
Did you have to do anything to try to distinguish yourself from him?
Yes, in the movie of Close Encounters, since Richard didn't have a beard, Steven Spielberg said, I think in this movie you're going to have to grow your beard back, which I think made everybody think I looked more like Richard. That's okay.
I understand you lied about your French in order to get the part of the French translator.
You've read my book, I don't know. I had spoken French in high school a bit. And when I was called in for the audition for Close Encounters, there was no acting required. It was just we talked, and then Steven Spielberg said, say something in French, because you need to be very fluent in French to do this part. And I said a few things, and then I said, il y aurait longtemps depuis que j'ai parlé français, si vous me donnez ce boulot, ce sera très difficile pour moi. And I went on a bit, saying to him that it had been years since I'd really spoken French, and if he gave me this job, it was really going to be hard. And I didn't lie, but I said it in French, which caused him, of course, since he didn't speak any French, to believe that I was this French whiz. And he said, great, you know, you start in 2 months, and you're going to have to go to India. And I think at that time, the Gobi Desert, I mean, it was like amazing. And I said, yeah, okay. And I walked out and I thought, what have I gotten myself into? Then they called and said, Francois Truffaut is going to play your vis-a-vis in this movie. And I thought, I'm going to have to lie in front of François Truffaut for 7 months in the Gobi Desert. And I went to Berlitz and I brought the script to them and I said, help me quickly. I have to both become fluent in French and translate the script into French because nobody had done that. You know, they assumed that I was such a French wizard that I would simply take whatever dialogue there was that had to be in French and convert it into my own beautiful French. And there were things in the script like, go dust the northern face of the mountain with EZ4 and stuff like that. We really had some time of it. And there were even a few things in India that we used to have to say, which are no longer in the movie. So by the end of it, I not only got paid and got to be in really one of my favorite movies that I've ever been involved with, certainly.
Avez-vous des maux de tête, des migraines?
Having headaches, migraines.
Yeah. Irritation des yeux et du sinus.
An irritation in your eyes and your sinuses.
Yeah. Des démangeaisons, des allergies.
You have hives. You have allergies.
Des brûlures sur le visage et sur le corps.
You're burning on your face and on your body.
Yes. Who are you people?
No contest.
Yeah, I got one just like in my living room. Who are you people?
Je pensais... Oui, tu connais.
Oui, tu connais.
Monsieur Neri, please, one more question. N'avez-vous pas fait récemment une rencontre?
Have you recently had a close encounter?
Une rencontre plutôt inhabituelle.
Close encounter with something very unusual.
You come from a movie family.
Mm-hmm.
You have relatives who operated the Balaban and Katz movie theater chain?
Yeah, my father was the youngest of seven brothers who were all in some way or other involved with a chain of theaters called Balaban and Katz in the Midwest that began, I guess, in about 1915. And a lot of the theaters are still there now, although they're not called that. Then my father's oldest brother, Barney Balaban, was the president of Paramount. He left the theater chain and became a producer, a studio head,
mm-hmm.
For about 30 years, ending in the late 50s, early 60s. And my grandfather left, who was Katz, left Balaban and Katz to go to MGM and be the head of production during the sort of great musical years at MGM in the 40s and the early 50s. But I never exactly felt that I was growing up in any kind of show business atmosphere, because certainly I wasn't. I grew up in Chicago, and as far as I was concerned, they were all in some sort of mysterious business. I did get to see movies for free, and mm-hmm. I went a fair amount. But other than that, I mean, it was not consciously any large influence on my life. Although, on the other hand, I was always interested in things like this. As a kid, I was a puppeteer, and you know, you spend hours alone in my room writing these bizarre little playlets that I would put on and forced everybody to be in. And my sisters were always getting pressed into service to play parts in my little productions that I would stage in the living room, in the arch between the dining room and the living room, you know, stuff like that. But a lot of kids do that, I think.
You thought your parents were in some mysterious business. What seemed mysterious about it?
Well, I could never figure out, first of all, what producers did. I mean, I remember
people can't figure it out.
My grandfather would come about once a year for Christmas, and I would see him, and he would say, you know, when you're grown up, we'll be producers together. And I would say, great, you know, and he'd leave, and I go, what's a producer? What does he do? I mean, he's in his office, but he's on the phone. I still couldn't figure out what exactly it was that he did other than go to the office and talk on the telephone. Which is, of course, exactly what I do all the time, is go to my office and talk on the telephone. My daughter said the other day, what do you do, Daddy? How do they pay you? What happens? You know, when I said, well, it is kind of mysterious, but when you're not seeing me the most, that's when I'm doing my most work. You know, when I'm directing the movie, when I'm, you know, acting in the thing that I'm, you know, that every once in a while I go away and do, that's, you know, that's when I do my work. And all the rest of the things that I do is just setting it all up and organizing it and preparing it. And that doesn't look like you're doing anything.
I'm wondering what kind of attitude your family had toward actors.
Well, I think they hid it from me, mostly. But what I could only imagine was they thought of actors as spoiled children who made life difficult, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for my father, it didn't matter because he was not in production at all. But I, you know, I think that for my other relatives who were at studios, that especially when they were at studios, which is when, you know, actors were really king in a way, you know, a studio had people under contract and they had to perform and they depended on them. I think, well, who knows? I mean, there is obviously the star system exists now probably more heavily. It's just there are less of them. But I think they thought of actors as kind of shiftless and not too responsible, and probably my parents were a little nervous about my doing this, although I always made a living at it. for some reason, when from the very beginning when I started working, I could always support myself. And I think they were just basically grateful that there was something I wanted to do and that I was able to do it.
Well, Bob Balaban, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Terry, thanks. It was nice being here.